that answer that question?
Percentage of bad checks.
Okay. Percentage of bad checks is small, like 1.5% of bad checks. And you've got to set up, we have standard letters. I deal with this in a seminar to some degree. We have standard letters in enterprise for all things in the company, like a bad check. We have a letter that says something like, "Dear Mr. Jones, we received a check from you for one of our products. We're sure that it's an error, an arithmetic on your part. We would like to we have a bad check procedure. We take the bad check, we redeposit it once. If it comes back again, then we call a bad check letter. We send a bad check letter out and in a very polite way suggest that maybe the person made an arithmetic error, and a certain percentage of people do, and they send you another check or a money order for the product. The deadbeats, there's always going to be a few. You'll have some that are non-collectible. But if you're doing enough volume, it's a bottom line thing. It's a small thing, no big deal. We never found it a big factor in the company.
Ted, because that's what we discovered is some products, I mean, some products have a huge problem. I mean, we will offer some products, and like you say, 50 to 70% of the orders will come on checks, and then other products will get a percentage where most of them come on credit cards, and the one that comes on checks will be bad checks. I mean, it's really strange for us because ours usually are product related. Depending on the product we have is whether it comes on a Visa, MasterCard, or check, and then no products right now that we're getting bad checks on. The Smuggler's Blues, which is a book about how to get your car back from the government if it was repossessed, is the one we had all the bad checks on, and those were.
Well, I don't understand why. I don't understand. I mean, I guess if you have your car impounded because you're dealing drugs, then of course probably your check may not be good. Our average order in the classified business is $400 plus. We take all forms of payment, but we literally spend that money before a check clears the bank. In other words, when we get an order for an ad, those ads, you know, like we close on Friday, all of those ads are out of our office by Monday noon. And we're talking about, oh, I don't know, somewhere between 400 and 700 insertion orders a week. So our average order is between about $413 or so, and that's for the last quarter. And that's slightly down from what it was this time last year. And we take checks, however, we require, if they want the order processed immediately, we have a check authorization place, we charge 2%, which is what we get charged, and they add it on the check. Otherwise, that check sits there for 3 weeks until it clears our bank. We have never had a check go bad we did not collect. We have had checks come back to us. They are always arithmetic errors. We call them because of the time-sensitive nature of our business. As a practical matter, it depends on your audience, I think, and what you're selling. And I don't think that, I think in probably in Ted's case, it's so statistically insignificant, nobody's ever crunched any numbers on it. In our business, it is so significant that any one that happens pops up. And we may get six a year. So, I mean, it's a non-thing.
So it's not that big with you.
It's not that big a deal.
Now, I might also add to the service that we offer where you can incorporate on the telephone in 15 minutes or less. Now, in that situation, we do...
Wait, repeat that. I want you to say that because I've never heard about this before. We can call you and incorporate on the phone in 15 minutes or less.
We can call my company that I sold, my former company, but that's why it became the largest incorporating company in America, actually. One of the reasons, because it blows lawyers' minds, too, that we can do it on the telephone. See, we're latched into the Secretary of State, and we do it all by computer and reserve the name and do it right on the telephone. See, a lot of times people need to incorporate...
Does that company still exist, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you mind giving the phone number out for people here and also on the tape of the company where we can get incorporated in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, you know, they sent me, I think I've got the... Yes, I've got the new their new brochure. You can, or just, if you want, you can just call a toll-free number and get this brochure. That I'm just looking over the copy.
Does it look good?
It looks good.
Do they need your help?
Yes. I'm rewriting some of it now. But let me see. Can you read the full?
How many people in this room have heard about this company that you can incorporate in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, I think...
I haven't heard about it.
I think this gentleman here...
Maybe you can describe what it's like for you.
So this is a testimonial.
Yes, personal testimonial. Doesn't matter. Called his number and within 15 minutes had our name registered, cleared, registered, and verbal approval on the phone that we were all set up. 15 minutes or less.
How much did it cost? Well, tell me what state you live in and then how much it cost.
I live in California. We were setting up a Delaware corporation, have set up a Delaware corporation, and it cost us a couple hundred bucks, I think.
How much?
A
couple hundred bucks.
And how did you pay? Visa, MasterCard, or?
I pulled out my MasterCard and gave it right over the phone.
And how did you find out about this? Through the book?
Well, through mail order stuff, which I had received from his corporation earlier.
Okay.
It works.
That's great.
I'd just like to make a comment, weeks for your check to clear, that if you have to let the check clear before you fulfill your product, that you say, please allow 2 to 3 weeks for delivery, because you don't want to...
Well, that's one way to do it. I just wanted to make the point in the company corporation, if you have a credit card, you can do what this gentleman did to set up his company instantly on the phone. A lot of times you have a business reason you want to incorporate today because you're buying something today, you want to buy it in the corporation, so it's a tremendous service for people that have no one else... To my knowledge, none of our competitors do that. We have a very much of a service-oriented approach to doing business.
What's the phone number? Everybody's saying, what's the phone number? I forgot. What's the phone number?
What's the phone number?
And will you get a commission off this?
800-542-2677.
Tell them you heard me at the seminar tell you about it, and they'll be even extra kind to you.
Karen, write that number down.
Yes, you can. The company corporation, if you have other reasons to incorporate in your own state, the company corporation will help you incorporate in your own state. Anywhere in the 50 states, but it's a specialist in the Delaware corporation.
Ted, what's that number again? I want to put that... 1-800, I got that part.
It's 1-800-542-2677. We've incorporated about 100,000... Well, this brochure says 88,000 people. 88,000 people in all 50 states and most of the free countries in the free world. Well, the cost, see, this gentleman said almost $200. What he's talking about, he bought a corporate kit, which you need. Well, you don't have to have it. See, you can incorporate, the filing fees are $74. It costs $45 for the first year for the register for the company to act as your registered agent. That's roughly $120. And then if you buy a corporate kit, which has a corporate seal in it, stock certificates, minutes, bylaws, and a binder, there's a kit, the economy kit's $49. You can get one for $79. And if you want 100% pure leather, $149. So it's going to cost you roughly $189 there. But ISOL has a S Corporation filing for $35. They do it for you. They also get your federal ID number if you want for $25. I mean, very low cost.
That's amazing.
Very low cost service. That's amazing. Why the company has become the largest company. See, I set up that company as a reader service when I wrote the book, because when I wrote the book, there was such antagonism to my book by the legal community. There were all the bar associations in America were writing me letters. The American Bar Association had a special meeting about the unauthorized practice of law. I mean, I really made a lot of waves. But I knew that I was constitutionally correct, or at least I felt that I was, because there are a number of reasons that under the First Amendment that people can't institute to. They wrote a book called How to Avoid Probate. And the bar associations basically got an injunction stopping the distribution of his book, and Norman Dacey fought that all the way to the New York and Connecticut Supreme Courts, and he won on the basis of the fact that he could distribute information, and the book has been a bestseller for many years. So I had done my research, and I knew he had that experience, and I was praying that somebody would file an action against me, because I would have even gotten more publicity, because I'm on all these TV shows, talk shows, talking about, you know, incorporating and so on. Now the climate's different. The company corporation does a lot of business with attorneys, with accountants, and with individuals, because a lot of people go into their attorney's office and the attorney uses the company corporation as basically does the work. So you can deal directly. If you feel more comfortable going to your attorney, letting him do it, letting him call the company corporation, do that, or you can just do it directly. We're also, just to finish this point on the cert, in the company corporation, if you incorporate today, there's two ways to do it, through credit card or they'll reserve your name today, and you can send filing fees if they don't have your money, because it's not fair. They're laying out money for you. So If you send a regular check, it'll take 2 weeks because they wait till for the check to clear. So another way you can operate for some businesses is ask for certified. Somebody wants the product right away. You can operate on a... You're in a wonderful position to control your cash flow. I love businesses that are very simple. Direct marketing gives you the opportunity to... wherein your customers are financing your growth. Basically, I can spend $1 million a month in advertising if I choose to. I have that many products going. But it's really not costing me $1 million. My customers are financing the growth. If you have to do it on accounts receivable, for instance, other publishers, the big ones, bookstores, the average time a bookstore pays their bill is something like 189 days. Bookstores are terrible, notorious, slow pay, terrible. If you're that kind of a publisher, you don't have the advantages that you have as a direct marketer, where you have the cash up front. You have the cash now before you get the product. So you're in a terrific...
Can you get any number of shares of stock you want without paying the state so many cents a share?
No. What I advocate in my book, if you read it carefully, is you get 3,000 shares at the lowest cost. For most of you, that's all you need, 3,000 shares. If, however, you want to go public, you want to sell stock to a lot of people, you can have 1 million shares if you want, but you pay a higher filing fee. It's all described in my book.
I see. That's the reason I've always advocated incorporating in Texas, because you can get 1 billion shares if you want to. You don't pay the state anything.
Well, what you have to look at is all the reasons for incorporating in Delaware. See, 2/3 of the American and New York Stock Exchange companies are headquartered in Delaware. The reason is they don't love Delaware. The reason is their best legal minds in America advise the corporations to do that. One of the big reasons is that Delaware has a court of chancery, the best business court system in the United States, the only one of its kind, with a long history of pro-management decisions. Now, if you're a Delaware corporation, there are a lot of circumstances where you can get the lawsuit adjudicated in Delaware. And under those circumstances, you want to be in Delaware, not any other state. It costs peanuts to do it. You do it all by mail. You never have to visit the state. It's the only place to do it.
Right. You don't want to fight the trend. Delaware is the place the big corporations are. Okay, we're going to...
If you're doing business in one state and you're incorporated in another, you have to register as a foreign corporation, and my book shows you how to do that. But probably the best secret in America is, and I don't advocate this, but lots and lots of people form Delaware corporations and don't qualify to do business in their own states. I don't advocate that. I think it's better to set up to file with the state. What a lot of people do, they go, oops, and they wait a year or two, and then they do it. But I don't advocate doing that.
Okay, so basically, though, are there any states that mandate that if you're going to do business...
Now, wait. I don't want anybody in here asking Ted legal advice. Well, you're asking Ted to say something on tape, and Ted is not going to give legal advice. He's not an attorney. I mean, if you want to read his book and contact his company, you don't put Ted on the line, or don't put me on the line, or anybody else to require somebody to give you legal or medical advice unless we're either physicians or attorneys. Don't you feel that way? I mean, we'll give you advice, but let's not do it in the context of class on tape in front of the world, okay?
For me or Bill?
Just another point of view on the legal question. You do have to register in the state that you live in and do business.
Now, this is an attorney, right?
Yes.
Okay. So ask him. He's an attorney. What's your fee per hour?
Well, to set up a corporation, you're usually looking at about $1,000 for an attorney. But I don't see any advantage in doing something in Delaware. This is a controversy, and there are legitimate opinions on both sides. But if you incorporate in Delaware and you live in California, you're going to have to now register in California, pay all the fees in California as if you had originally incorporated in California. So there's not really much of an advantage in going to Delaware. There are some advantages in Delaware for big corporations, but not for small corporations, in my view. You should incorporate in the state where you're going to do business.
Well, that's the other view, and that's what most attorneys will say to you when you go into...
Let's end the discussion on the corporations, because we want to cover the mechanics.
Okay.
But Ted, I appreciate that. If you have a question about mechanics, we'll let you... Because we only have about an hour and a half to do the mechanics this morning. I definitely want to cover that.
You mentioned COD, which may or may not be viable. Would you explain... the difference in COD rejection fees in the Postal Service versus...
Oh, absolutely. Do not ever use the U.S. Postal Service COD.
What is the difference in fees between a Postal Service versus UPS service rejection?
Yeah, deliver the package, collect the money, cash the check, and deliver the money back to you. And you don't have to stand in line. They'll actually do that for you. As far as the COD fee, as the seller, you shouldn't be concerned because you're going to charge that to your customer.
But
the main point is you cannot afford... let's say you had to go file 100 CODs today. You want to stand in line in the post office?
I understand, but what would the fees be?
No, it's not even a question. It's not even a question. You do not have the time in your life to go stand in line in the post office. You want somebody to come to your office and fill out. So the fees don't matter because you're not going to pay them. I know what you're asking is a return fee. We have so few returns, it's not really a significant part of our operation. We probably have 1%, less than 1% COD returns. And that's because we ship the same day. We always ship the same day on COD. And we send the postcard out and we do all the other things. Plus, we send it to a qualified list of consumers who've, you know, above average income, above average intelligent. We know the target market. We know that they're buying directly from the mail. We know what, you know, a lot of people like UPS COD trucks come in.
Bill, I think that, I'm not too familiar with this, but the company I work for has always used United Parcel Service because of the points that you just made. However, we would prefer to use the United States Mail. We have discovered that the mail, the post office will work with you. You can set up manifests.
Now wait. When you say we'll work with you, where are you located?
We're in Los Angeles.
We're in Hot Springs, Arkansas. We're lucky to have a post office here. So what I'm saying is that yes, if you live in a big enough city and have large enough volume, anybody will work with you.
Well, I think it's relatively new. Because, you know, they didn't do it. They knew they're getting smart. They were losing a lot of business.
But our point is that for our customers, the most impressive thing to them and their neighbors is to see this big brown truck with this guy in uniform jump out and make this running dash toward the house with a box.
Yes, but see, we've also found out that there's some redlining with United Parcel. And we want to make sure that our packages get there. The mailman has to go into those neighborhoods.
That's true. No, what she's saying is that United Parcel, there are certain areas they won't go into, and there are certain places they can't get into. If you're going to ship something to Canada, are they still on strike? Can we ship into Canada? There was a strike in Canada for a long time. We couldn't ship anything UPS into Canada because of problems. So, yeah, there are areas. Right.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
There are some places that you can't get a cab to take you in, and UPS is not going to go in there. But
we
now,
have all
Loretta.
Customers in those
okay,
areas.
I would say most of our customers don't live in places like that. Good
Bill?
Point.
If you have a customer who needs a product immediately and they want overnight delivery, they're paying that with us. They pay that whatever that fee is. We have found if you ship something next day UPS and it's a COD, the check comes back to you by mail. If you ship FedEx, the check comes back to you FedEx. You ship on Monday, COD, it arrives Tuesday, you get your...
But in Hot Springs, we don't have a FedEx. Hot Springs, which is 36,000 in a county of 90,000, we don't have a FedEx distributorship. UPS comes by our office twice a day. They actually send somebody from Europe to visit our office because we're shipping so many packages overseas. They call us, they ask us, are we doing a good job for you? They called us last week and said, since you guys are sending so many next day air packages, we're gonna give you a break on the next day air cost. So basically we do business with a company that wants to do business with us rather than having to chase somebody down. For most people, I know that a lot of people in this room who live in larger cities, Federal Express is what they use, and I can understand why because it's the ease of use, but for us, we have to make a phone call to Little Rock. They have to schedule a truck. They've got to come down here. We don't have the supplies. They don't have a drop-off station. So the point is, use whatever. He's saying is that we asked UPS if we could be the last pickup of the day. And does anybody know why we'd want to be the last pickup of the day? So that every single order we get for that day can be shipped that day. If they picked us up at 11 o'clock in the morning, it means that everybody who orders today at least won't be shipped till tomorrow. But because we asked them and they said, sure. And then they schedule a morning drop-off, and we say, can you drop off in the morning and pick up in the evening? Because it'd kind of be nice for our business. Drop us off the first package in the day. Make us the first person on the route and the last person on the route. And you know what they said? Okay. And you know why? Because we asked them. Of course, we're also the largest UPS shipper and receiver on several. Yeah, and Hot Springs, it helps. And if we could figure out how to send direct mail offers through UPS affordably, we probably would. Just because it's impressive to have somebody run up and deliver you a package. Have you seen these guys? They run everywhere. I mean, they're just running.
Right before I left New Mexico, I got a direct mailing said if I paid with cash, check, or money order, I got a 3% discount. Does that work, or could you use a premium like that too?
It's illegal in some places to do that. And what we do is we have one price, and we don't want them to consider answering questions like that in their mind. We just want to say same price no matter what you pay.
Bill, we're trying that out, and we've discovered that instead of, because we're doing some info of 10% or whatever, if someone will use a credit card rather than send us a check, we give them an extra jar of face cream.
Right,
we give them
like
something else, the perceived value, because instead of giving them a 10% discount, which may be $5, we're sending them a $20 jar of cream.
Right,
and
give them something
free
when they use
it. It's very different.
Yeah. Encourage them to make the decision and also remove roadblocks so they can make the decision. Let's get back to the mechanics here for a minute, okay, because I want to cover this. We talked about the four pieces of your offer, of the envelope. Now, this is all mechanical stuff that you need to know even if you're not physically involved with it. You have the envelope, the offer, the order form, the return envelope. As you get more sophisticated, as you read Gary Halbert's letter, you'll learn a lot more things that you can do. But in most cases, envelope, depending on your target market, there's going to be a plain white envelope with nothing on the outside except for your return address. On our envelopes, we don't even put the name of our company. We just put a street and a city and state. Because the things that we're mailing, it raises curiosity to who this is from. We also either hand address our envelopes or direct imprint them. We also always use a live stamp, a real stamp. Now, we're going to cover the mechanics. I'll let you ask questions later. I want to get through the mechanics. We use a real stamp. We do not put a barcode on our envelope. I mean, it can't look like too personal a letter with a barcode. I got a letter from Jay Abrahams, of all people, a pink envelope, hand-addressed. It looked like it was hand-addressed with a live stamp with a barcode on it. It said personal. How personal can it be with a barcode? But his was a bulk rate. But anyway, we have software you can barcode, don't barcode your envelope. That's the outside. Keep it plain. Right now at this level, for what you're doing, keep it plain and simple so that it'll get open. When they pull the material out of the envelope...
Wait. You can't invite me up here and then I'll be talked, Bill.
When you get your envelope at your printer, it's going to look... I mean, when you get your printing done, this is four pages. Actually, it's one sheet of paper, four pages, right? You've got to take this and put it in the envelope in some sequence or fold it. Obviously, you want to fold it like this, at least for the first fold, so that you have four pages. And then you'll want to fold it in some way so it'll fit in the envelope.
I want to go back. I'm not there yet.
Okay.
One of the things that's good to test, depending on your list, and everything is depending on your list and your audience, is teaser copy. The law department, and again, this is a... this is an ad, corporate law department, and it says Karen F. Anderson. I knew immediately it came from the Finance Over 50 list, and I knew it was an ad. But it says corporate law department. It's got a 24-cent metered postage on it, which looks sort of official. It does have a barcode, which the post office did, but in red ink on the outside, it says personal. This is teaser copy. This is making it look like it's a businessy type letter.
Well, you're setting yourself up.
Huh?
You see Gary Halbert back there?
I know. I'm just telling you.
Gary is so anxious to stand up and say something. He's going to tell you something in a minute. If he doesn't, I'm going to tell you.
Okay. And then when you open it up, it's this little deal. But one of the things that is also working is Post-it notes. Post-it notes, once you open your envelope and you take it out, and this says, thought you'd be interested. It doesn't have my name on it. It just has a post-it note that says, thought you'd be interested. And the outside teaser copy that said personal was handwritten. This is handwritten. This is printed handwritten. But it looks like somebody took the time to do it. Go ahead, Gary.
What was I going to say, Bill?
Gary, this is what looks like a personal letter from an attorney.
Yeah.
Now, what happens if you get a personal letter from an attorney? It looks like it's a personal letter from an attorney.
How many people in here market to the medical profession or other business to business? I tell you a really good trick. If you're marketing to doctors, doctors separate their mail into a third pile, and that's everything that comes from an attorney, because they don't want their secretaries to know that they're getting sued for amputating the wrong leg. And if you're marketing to businessmen and healthcare professionals in particular, you can really improve your response by teaming up with an attorney when you send it on his letterhead and his envelope, because that letter will get opened and read. And the way you do it, you make it a personalized letter and you say, "Dear Dr. Smith, as you can see at the top of this letterhead, I'm an attorney at law. However, I'd like to put your mind at ease immediately. This is one of the few pieces of mail you'll ever get from an attorney that actually contains good news. Here's what it's all about." And then you segue into what you're talking about. And,
what Gary's saying is absolutely right. You send a personal letter if it's from an attorney. But what you don't do is, because when you get an attorney letter, you open it up real quick, right? As soon as you open that envelope, if you see colors in there, you say, "This is an ad, and this guy tricked me," and you just throw it away.
That's exactly right.
And you don't want that. So if you use the attorney,
it's got to
be a personal letter.
And it's folded in. Mm-hmm. And a letter from an attorney is folded out. Your printer, your letter shop, will ask you how you want it folded. If you look at, let me see the one that's open.
Don't send anything at this level until you get much more sophisticated. As soon as you open the envelope, you see lots of colors. And we're going to talk about that next when we talk about folding the offer.
Yeah, because when you open the envelope, if it's a letter from the personal letter from your attorney, it's going to be folded in. The copy's going to be inside, and you're going to have to unfold it. If this is an ad for second opinion, and the masthead and the opening and the headline and everything is folded out, so when you open the envelope, this is what you see when it first comes out of the envelope. And so your letter shop's going to ask you how you want it folded, and you need to be able to know why you want it folded.
That's right. That's what we're talking about right now is folding. Like we said, we have several sheets of paper that are going to go into the envelope. Don't just randomly put those in the envelope. As soon as a person rips the top of the envelope, they'll peek in to see what's in there. If they see lots of colors and brochures and things, you're going to think, "Well, this is another Ed McMahon something." Because mail, you show your, Karen, would you pull this down, please? Mail order people who receive direct mail offers are becoming more and more sophisticated. And colors used to work, now they don't work as well at your level. I mean, when you get to the point where you can test lots of stuff and do different ways, then you can afford to find out whether it works for you or not. But folding, when you write an offer, when an offer is written, most copywriters will take into account the headline on your offer. You see this? It says junk mail. Are you kidding? This is from Ed McMahon. Back to what I was saying. When your copywriter writes offers, he's considering what will be the first thing somebody sees when they pull this offer out of the envelope. Now, because he's writing it that way, you want it stuffed in that envelope that way so that when it's pulled out, that what they actually see is the headline. And if you use a photograph or any type of attention grabber, that's what they see first. You don't want them to see the order form or the envelope because they're going to say, "Somebody's trying to get money from me," and just toss it before they read it. So you want to stuff it in there like this. On the orders that we use, you notice that we have the letter. And when you open the letter, you're sitting in your chair, you open your letter like this. What falls out? An order form with pictures of stuff on it. It's going to fall into their lap. Hopefully that's not going to distract them and they'll go ahead and read the letter. But if it does distract them, they look at the order form. The complete offer is condensed on the order form with the photographs and the return envelope. This has to do with folding. If you're using a lot of material folded inside, make sure it all fits. When you design a return envelope, what if it doesn't fit? What if you cannot fold your letter around your return envelope, or you cannot fold your letter around your offer? Then what are you going to do? So these are all mechanics you need to concern yourself with.
And again, when you're adding pieces to your, if you're going to put a response device and a envelope and your letter, what's the first thing you want to figure out?
You see, we have a heavy, I'm going to give you a hint. This is a heavyweight piece of paper.
How much does it weigh?
How much does this weigh?
Because you want to keep this under an ounce if you're sending it first class. You absolutely want to do. I had, this is a...
write that down. Keep it under 1 ounce. Keep it under 9 tenths of an ounce.
And this is going to sound crazy, but someone was mailing a heavy piece in Seattle, and they were mailing like 300,000 pieces, and it was a damp, heavy, muggy day when they went to mail it, and the humidity pushed it over an ounce.
Right.
And they waited till a dry day, dried it out, did it again because they didn't want to do the whole thing, and it did. I mean, do you want to pay another 29 cents on 300,000 pieces? I wouldn't. But like I said, I've caught things that have gone to the post office and it's been, just a hair over an ounce, and you still have to pay for it. So you may have to, and this is where your printer's going to come in and help you. What's the lightest weight paper you can put it on that you can't see through the paper?
you know, so it looks chintzy. If you're putting it on a heavier paper and the stock is heavy and you put all your things and it looks real impressive, it could weigh, you know, you may have to put 52 cents on it. That in postage alone is going to up your per piece cost of your mailing. And sometimes you want to do that. If the offer is good enough and you've
got... Well, this is a good example. This is a 52 cent mailing here.
And something else as simple as this sounds, not just paperweight. I mean, you may not want to come down in paperweight because you would be able to see through the page. I've just cut an eighth of an inch off the edge of the paper. Just bring the paper size down a little bit. And as Bill keeps telling you, find a good printer. There are a lot of printers who won't tell you this, who don't know it. They don't understand what we're doing. They do not understand a direct mail package. They think you're crazy when you want to insert the pieces in a certain order. They just don't get it. And you really have to stand your ground with them, but you also have to be smarter than they are. And just thinking of cutting an eighth of an inch off the edge of the paper can make all
I've never thought about that. Of course, I never need to. But printer?
Well, it's one of the
Wayne, you remember that, right?
If
you ever get in trouble? Oh, you've done, okay.
Let me tell you what you can mail for under an ounce. You can mail a number 10 envelope, an 8-page letter.
Write this down. I'm going to also put this on the board because this is pretty important.
You can mail a number 10 envelope with a stamp on it. You can mail an 8-page letter with a penny attached to the first page, a reply envelope, and an order form. You can do it all for under an ounce if you're working with the right printer and he's really paying attention to what you're doing. One other comment I want to make, though. As a general rule, if you're selling the kind of things that I hope you gravitate to, normally the high-ticket, high-profit items, I like to think in terms of making my mail more expensive. My company's the biggest customer of Federal Express in our entire county, including the military. And the reason we mail so many Federal Express packages is that it makes a terrific impact. One time I explained it, some of you, well, not very many of you, but a couple of you are as old as I am, and you can maybe remember years ago when your grandmother got a telephone call, and she'd pick up the phone and she'd say to her husband, she'd say, "Cliff, it's long distance." It made a big impact. Of course, a long distance call doesn't make any impact at all now. But for most people and for many businesses, a Federal Express package really has that same effect of going to the expense of sending it Federal Express will just explode your profits. I have mailed as few as 600 Federal Express pieces of mail and taking in $400,000 or $500,000 from those mailings because it makes such a terrific impact. That's just something for you to think about.
I want to add one thing there. When Gary did that, I used to work for Gary before I came here to Arkansas. We used to go to Federal Express and we really wheeled and dealt with those guys and we got it down to the point where we shipped Federal Express our printing and they stuffed. They stuffed, put labels on, and shipped. And because it was easier for them to do that than it was for us to do it. And you really wheel and deal if you're going to deal in bulk with Federal Express.
That's right. They're not like the post office. You can negotiate the fees for FedEx. Karen did a brilliant job. Got.
Remember this thing we looked at yesterday? It looks like Federal Express. It's bulk rate mail. You need to find a good printer that can do something like that if you want to have...
So I don't forget. If you've got your postal scale and you have a good electronic one and you're weighing your piece, don't forget to weigh it without the postage on it. Because a lot of times you've got your piece and you don't have your postage there, you know, because you're going to buy 5,000 stamps or whatever, and you've got to weigh your piece and your stamp can push it over. So weigh the piece out completely as it's ready to drop in to the mailbox. Because those little kinds of things can make a big difference.
I'm going to show you an offer that many of you may...
Just 1 second, Bill. On those fake Federal Express envelopes, I don't know if you told them or not, but a really great source for those, the guy who invented them, is a guy named Bill Royale.
Everybody's been asking me about where to get these things anyway. Gary, would you repeat that, please?
It's Bill Royale. He's in my $1 million Rolodex, I believe, and if he's not, you can get his number from my office.
Okay.
But he's the guy who invented these, I believe, and he has all kinds of really masterpiece versions of that.
So anybody who needs to know the address of the person who invented these can call Gary's office and speak to Terry or somebody there. I want to show you, this is an offer, probably some of you got it, I showed you the front part of this the other day, the headline says, now we sent this in a non-standard size envelope, basically whatever that is, 4x9 envelope. When you pull it out, the headline says, "Why Gary Halbert is telling his closest friends." So we have a good headline that attracts attention. If the headline didn't work on the back, we have photos. And there's photos of here of people like John Eager in a hot tub. Now, if that won't grab attention, I don't know what will. And there's photos of people out of the crystal mine holding crystals, and you kind of figure, what in the world is going on? And actually, what we have sent them is a photo gallery of everything that happened, a printed photo gallery of people having a good time at one of our boot camps. So this is designed to attract attention. So when it pulled out of the envelope, they either looked at the headline or the photo gallery. If they didn't like that, there was another sheet of paper that fell out. That was a testimonial sheet, what people are saying about the boot camp. And then a sheet that says, "The quickest way I know to make $1 million. All not the best examples in the world, but these are things that we do to creatively get people involved with what we're sending out. Photos of real people, especially lots of people having a good time, doing things that you have no idea what this has to do with the offer, causes them to read the offer. Is John Eager still in here? I didn't think he was, because when I mentioned his name in the hot tub. Anybody wants to see John Eager in a hot tub? This is back when John had a beard and a mustache. And it's a real interesting...
Straight in the hot tub.
Yeah. But this worked very well.
I think this is singularly ungrateful of you.
But these are the type of things you have to do. So, sure, this is the basic offer here. The basic mechanics here is you're going to need these pieces. An envelope, an offer, an order form, return envelope. You got to have that as the basics, right? But from then on, you can get creative. The point is, this is not a contest to see how creative you can be. This is a contest to see how many sales you can get. You got to keep that in mind in everything you do. The number one thing you want, first of all, is to get the envelope opened. You got to do everything you can to encourage that envelope getting opened. Ted.
I'd just like to say that I'm a big fan of envelope tests, and I notice people that I see in you hear a lot about testing, but the cheapest tests you can do are envelope tests. The cheapest tests you can do. Now, one example in our situation, we're always testing different. We've tested Gary's concept, the A-pile, B-pile idea, and doing first-class mail. In our situation, we have always teaser copy works better than no teaser copy, with one exception, and that's when we do a tear sheet mailing. When we have a successful space ad and we want to mail it, we will do it in the first class envelope, hand address look, live stamp. All of our other offers are with teaser copy, and the reason that they are is because they work.
What's the letter inside the envelope?
Beg pardon?
What's the letter inside the envelope?
Well, they're different offers depending on the product. We have some letters from attorneys that look like they're letters from attorneys, but they go out, they don't go out first class, they go out with a live stamp, with a bulk stamp. So the letters vary. I wanted to give you one example of, we had one product called the Handbook of Business Turnaround Strategies, and we couldn't make it work in direct mail. So I wrote five new teaser copies, and one of them is, "How to Get Very, Very Rich Turning Around Any Business." As the new teaser, everything else the same letter and so forth. And that teaser copy on the outside, oh, see inside for details. That teaser copy made that particular offer go from a loser to a winner. Just the outside envelope test. Your outside teaser is like a headline in an ad. It's critical. It's got to be artfully done, communicate the message really well. And in fact, the outside teaser can be the same as the inside, or it can be different than the inside headline. So I wanted to share that as another perspective. In other words, the cheapest test you can do, you can test the, and do it. Do the A-pile, B-pile, blank envelope, the way Bill's describing, there's a lot of advantages. The mail gets forwarded, a lot of good advantages that way. But also test when you can, as you can, with an outside teaser for your offer, your product. And see, compare the two.
See, this is great. I mean, what you're learning here is that there are lots of ways to do this differently. If everybody in this room went out sort of mailing letters exactly like that, using the Gary Halbert format, how long would it be before consumers get tired of it and say, you know, this is another one of those letters, because I can tell there's nothing on the outside. There's just a return address with no name on it. It's got a stick'em stamp on it, and it looks like it's a direct address, and they don't even open the envelope. So everything you do to encourage you to open the envelope, and everything you do differently that works, tell us about, because we'll tell you what works for us.
This is another illustration of, oh, I don't have
I got tired of businessy looking envelopes. This is a promotion that I did that pulled pretty well, and I did it in a Monarch size. And this is a, you know, you don't, this is doesn't looking more like a personal letter to me, and I did it in a Monarch, and then the return address is printed on the back. And instead of having the name of the company, it has the name of the client here. And then, can you open this for me? I can just grab it.
It's your mail, isn't it?
No, it's, well, it's...
Is this laser products?
No, it's not. This is, thank you. And then when you open this one up, it looks like it's on letterhead. And it has the client's name at the top, and then it folds down here. And then on the bottom, it looks like the PS is done in reflex blue. And this has the person's name. And it has, this was a four-line address. So this was a business letter. And it has Dear Bruce on it. And it has this sincerely, the name is printed there. And the address of the company is written down here along the bottom. And this looks like a personal type letter, but then you open it up and it's also got an endorsement from the desk of, which is looking more like a note, and then it has a business reply card in the envelope. But when you first open it, it looks, you know, you're getting a little tiny envelope. The difference in this package is that it's different from a businessy looking, it looks more like a personal letter. I mean, it worked. And this isn't to say that there's one right way and one and a wrong way to do this. Like Ted said, you just have to keep testing things, and I just got bored.
And what you do when you get home, if you haven't already done this, is get you a big old cardboard box and put it wherever you sit and open your mail, and every time you get a piece of what we all know is not junk mail, if you read it or whether you open it or not, throw it in that box, because that's going to be your reference file. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to come back and finish off this morning. I have a book here called Words That Sell. If you'd like to look at this book, it's a real good book. Some people ask me what words to use and what words never to use. It's a good place to find those books. These books are available. Oh, by the way, there's a box in the back if you want to put your critique forms in, a cardboard box by the door. We're going to finish the mechanics of direct mail. Had a good question here. What comes after folding? After you fold your envelope, put the pieces together, you want to put it in your master envelope, which is the envelope you're going to send to your customer. Hopefully by that time you have printed the name of the customer. I strongly recommend that you do direct address printing if possible. It does increase the chances of your offer getting open unless the customer is already familiar with you and looking forward to your products. Direct address printing is something we're going to demonstrate down at our offices later on this afternoon. We do everything by hand simply because we don't do large enough mailings yet to use the machines, which means we have people in our offices that hand fold, or actually they come folded from the printer, that build the offer with all the pieces together, stuff them in the envelope, you use a wet sponge, don't lick your envelopes, you get real tired after about 3,000 envelopes. You use a wet sponge, seal your envelope, let the envelope dry as you stack them up, use a wet sponge and also put the stamp on it. If you're mailing first class, you just bundle them up, put rubber bands in them, drop them in the mailbox. I don't drop them in the mailbox because the postman might say these are too heavy. Did you hear the story about the postman in northeastern United States? He sold his house, and the new buyers of the house came in and bought it and found over 270,000 pieces of mail stuffed in the walls. It's a true story. Now, how would you like that to have been your first test mailing? It was somebody's first test mailing. That's why when we drop off our letters, we may drop them in 5 different mailboxes. We mail normally on a test. If we're doing 1,000 mailings, we do not mail all 1,000 the same day at the same place. And I'm going to talk about timing. John Eager.
I want to point out to all of you, I was telling some people back here that if anything can go wrong with your business and the direct response business, it will go wrong. Every day in the morning and after lunch, we have people on the phone with scripts in front of them listening to every single voicemail script we have running. We check every single piece of mail that goes out 2, 3, 4, 5 times. That doesn't mean it succeeds. We make mistakes. I told you about some of them. But you cannot possibly expect anything that you do successfully to continue to be successful. You must assume that every conceivable thing, even things unimaginable that cannot possibly go wrong, will go wrong. If you function from that premise, that doesn't make you some sort of, you know, kind of crazy person. It makes you vigilant And so 90% of the mistakes that would you just miss, you catch. The other 10% you can live with. And the other thing is that you model that behavior for your staff and your support people, and they become vigilant for those same things. And eventually, over a period of time, you don't have to be so vigilant because other people know how important all that is. But every one of those mistakes is money lost. Is money lost. Now, all of our voicemail systems have redundant systems that run parallel. And we may change a voicemail script twice a day for 5 weeks to get it right. Because every half a percent change may mean $2,500.
That you depend on making that much money tomorrow. You get real precise about what you're doing, because if you get to the point where you depend on, and I don't know how much John makes, but it's a lot more than most of us in here will make in a day or a month or a year. Once you get to that point, you get real serious about what you're doing.
And that's the wonderful thing about listening to Ted Nicholas, because Ted really does know the statistics that make his companies work, or else they wouldn't have worked and nobody would have bought them from him.
But I want to remind everybody something, and this is probably the most important thing I've ever heard from anybody, and probably the most important thing we heard here in the last 4 days, and that is, what's number one? Your family and relationships, your number one priority, because if your relationships, if your life is screwed up, everything else you do is going to be screwed up. What's number two? That's right, health. If your health is screwed up, what are you going to do? That's right. And then what's number three? Business. You've got to keep it in that level. If business ever reaches top, your other two are guaranteed to get screwed up. So don't forget those priorities. All right, one of the things you're going to get from me in about 10 to 15 days is going to be a checkoff sheet, just like when a pilot gets on an airplane and gets ready to take off. Pilots have to, you know, go through all the gears and the flaps and make sure everything is cool. But you're going to get a checkoff sheet for a direct mail from me. So it's going to say check postage, make sure that you have the right names and addresses, make sure the envelope's the right size, did you put your phone number on it, do you have a Visa, MasterCard? So you just, it's the same mental checkoff that most of us use. So when you get this, I'm going to send it to you. You can use it any way you want as long as you don't remail it. Now I'm going to talk fast for the first time. I'm going to talk fast for a little bit for the next 20 minutes to get this done. This is mailing. And mailing is fairly easy to know what not to do. Never, 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 never mail anything on a Friday. Because postal workers are human and they want to go home, and they can't go home until everything is mailed or out of sight. The absolute worst thing you can do is mail after 3 o'clock on a Friday. Because like Gary says, if you do, you might want to go check the dumpsters Friday night to see if your mail is in there. For the most part, postal employees are honest, but for the most part, they're also human, and things happen to your mail. Never, 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 never mail on a Friday. Also, never, 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 never mail after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, any day. Develop a relationship with the post office employees you will be dealing with. Develop a personal friend-type relationship. Donuts are good, but we have friends at the post office who we have sold cars to, and they were not lemons, they were good cars, and we made them a good deal. We see them every day, we talk to them. When we see them in public, we talk to them. When we see them in the post office, we treat them like humans. We want them to know that we like them. And it's paid off because we have mail that is, if it says to Gorilla Bill, Hot Springs, Arkansas, it gets to me. Because they all know who we are. It helps to be the largest customer of a post office. If I was mailing in Los Angeles, I would be scared to death. Because I am going to be a very, 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 very small fish in a very, very large ocean. And if they lose my 100 pieces or 1,000 pieces that I mailed today, I'm in trouble. Another thing that we do, I'm going to put this up here, never on a Friday. Never on a Friday, never after 3. Never. Never, never, never the day before a holiday. If it's a 3-day weekend, never mail on 3-day weekends. Because they don't want to go on holidays, they're going to forget your bags. Something we do primarily, we did this by accident at first because we were kind of a small company, is we don't generally mail it all on the same day. We'll mail a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and a Thursday. Because we don't want to carry all the bags down there the same day because they're heavy. And what we find out is our customers get them on spaced out days. I mean, the spacing is nice because instead of mailing 10,000 on Tuesday and getting 10,000 calls on Monday, we won't get 10,000. All our calls come out spread out.
I just plug Letter Shop Services.
If you, I mean, part of what Bill is saying is, in their operation, they can afford to walk it to the post office to see that it happens. You may need to monitor it, but I don't know that there are a lot of like Gary's staff, if they're available to, you know, to supervise a drop of a, you know, 20,000 pieces and take them down to the post office. That's where a letter shop will come in. In a letter shop, you'll get charged a fee. Sometimes it's $25 across the board. Some at the time, it's a percentage, I mean, a price per thousand. But what they'll do is they will sort it, they'll bag it, they'll tie it, they'll deliver it to the post office. You just have to make very, very sure it's a person you can trust that's monitoring it for you, and that's what you're paying the letter shop to do, besides the stuffing and all those kinds of things. But I know that I always can't get to the post office to supervise it, but I have people that I've worked with that I trust to get it there. The other thing that you do is you get a receipt from the post office, and it just makes you feel better. Sometimes it doesn't make any difference, but it makes you feel better, and you find out what time it got there and when it happened, and you get your receipts from the post office to make sure that you at least have some documentation from your letter shop that it did get in the mail. I had a piece for Jay Abraham, and if anybody's worked with Janet in Jay's office, Janet was just hysterical wanting to know when this piece dropped because they were looking for a response for it. And so I went back to my letter shop guy and I got the receipt so I could tell her exactly when the various bundles went to the post office and when they got mailed. And so, you know, if you're waiting in the mail for, I mean, if you're waiting at home or at your office for a response to a piece, you want to know when it got mailed, and then you can begin to look at response rates on, you know, when people are going to respond to your offer.
Thank you. Okay. Spreader mailing out, never before a holiday, never after 3 o'clock, never on a Friday. I'm going to write something here that's obvious that most people never do. This is very, very obvious. If you're mailing a letter out to 1,000 customers, you know what it looks like when it goes out, right? Because you stuffed it, you licked it, you stamped it, and you put it in the post office. What does it look like when your customers get it? Only one way to find out, right? Mail to yourself. Mail to yourself. I'm going to write something here that's obvious that most people never do. This is very, very obvious. If you're mailing a letter out to 1,000 customers, you know what it looks like when it goes out, right? Because you stuffed it, you licked it, you stamped it, and you put it in the post office. What does it look like when your customers get it? Only one way to find out, right? Mail to yourself. Mail to yourself. Make sure that the letter shop mails to you. Actually, seed the list with your own name. Mail to yourself. She said, and her mother and your sister and everybody else. Mail to people who are going to be critics. So when they say, you know, I got this, it was destroyed. We had one of our subscribers mail us a videotape. It may have been Glenn Osborne. Glenn, are you in here? I don't know if it was you or not. Somebody mailed us a videotape. It was a promotional where we said, look, when you're trying to attract a client, what you do is you take a blank videotape case, you put an insert that says the guy's name on it, you mail it out to him, you say, this is how you attract a customer. We got a videotape in. He mailed it in a jet envelope, which is a little bubble pack envelope, but there was no videotape in the tape because that's not your... You open the tape up and it says, your tape could be here if you want more information on having a videotape of yourself. Call me and I'll produce the tape for you. But when we mailed a box. When the person, I don't know if it was Glenn who mailed it, but somebody mailed it to us, the tape case was in about 16,000 pieces. Because he didn't know that when you mailed it, the post office ran it through a pretty good machine. It went like this. And it smashed it. So he's trying to get the president of a major corporation to buy his services. So you open up the envelope and you take it and shake it. And all these pieces come out with little notes saying, if you order from us, your tape will look like this.